Welcome to episode 9 of the session series from the Georgia Chamber podcast. While we're recording today's episode, we officially have 10 days left in the 2024 legislative session, and Sine Die is going to be at the end of this month on March 28th.
It is hard to believe that 3 weeks from today, we will maybe be recording our Sine Die episode. I cannot wrap my head around the fact that we are almost through with this session. It's been a wild ride. It's been a whirlwind, but we've had a good time.
We have had a great time, and thank you to all of our listeners who keep tuning in each week. But if you tuned in for last week's episode, thank you for listening to us talk about Crossover Day, and you heard from a few special guests about the private property rights bill, which was SB 542. You heard from the director of the Georgia Screen Entertainment Coalition about HB 1180, and we actually heard from Representative Rick Jaspers about the transportation funding bill, which was HB 617. So if you're interested in hearing more about those pieces of legislation, you can tune in to last week's episode where we went a little bit more in depth on those bills. But what other action did we see take place on Crossover Day?
The only other chamber-endorsed bill that saw movement on Crossover Day was House Bill 926, and that's by Representative Matt Reeves of Duluth. And this is the Second Chance Workforce Act, which would waive fees to reinstate a driver's license when appropriate and would also allow for a driver's license suspended due to missing a court date to be reinstated when that court date has been rescheduled. Just allows for the people to get back into the workforce a little sooner and is, of course, one of the chamber priorities. House Bill 926 passed the House of Representatives on crossover with a vote of 159-1, and now it awaits consideration in the Senate. Outside of Crossover Day, it's been a pretty slow week here around the Capitol, kind of a weird week, a little post-crossover quiet before the storm. But outside of that, we've seen movement in the Senate Finance Committee, who took up House Bill 808 on Wednesday. I've talked about this bill probably every week, but House Bill 808 by Mike Chokas increases the exemption on tangible personal property tax from $7,500 to $20,000, and Senator John Albers will be carrying that bill throughout the Senate. This afternoon, we expect Senate Bill 429 by Senator Greg Dolezal and House Bill 880 by Representative Bethany Ballard to be heard in their respective committees. Senate Bill 429 is part of the Lieutenant Governor's Red Tape Rollback Initiative and gives the General Assembly tools to evaluate pending legislation and rules that may impact small businesses, and it also creates a more direct path for reviewing agency regulations. This bill also requires each agency to engage in zero-based rulemaking and do a top-to-bottom review of all rules periodically. Finally, Senate Bill 429 provides a new definition of small business under the state's Administrative Procedures Act, which raises the employee threshold from 100 to 300 for small businesses. This is hearing only, so there will be no movement there, but stay tuned to next week's podcast to see what additional movement on that bill may come from the House Budget and Fiscal Affairs Oversight Committee.
And as always, our Government Affairs Council met this week, and Katie gets to talk about her favorite topic. We took a support position on yet another tax bill today. So, Katie, tell our listeners a little bit about HB 1023.
Kayla, I think I've cemented myself as a tax nerd, for better or worse. But yes, you are right. Today, the Government Affairs Council ratified our support position on House Bill 1023 by Representative Bruce Williamson. This bill aims to reduce the state's flat corporate income tax rate from 5.75% to match the personal income tax rate moving forward. Of course, you may recall House Bill 1015, which passed out of the House earlier this session. It lowers the personal income tax rate from 5.49% to 5.39% effective July 1st of this year. It now is awaiting further action in the Senate, but if both of these bills end up receiving signature from the governor, we will see the corporate income tax rate and the personal income tax rates both reach 5.39% this year. Of course, you also may remember that the ultimate goal is to get both of these, or at least right now, the personal income tax rate down to 4.99%. If both of these pass, we'll see both the corporate income tax rate and the personal income tax rate go down to 4.99% in the next few years.
That's great news for the business community here in Georgia. And we also received updates on two of our scorecard bills in GAC today. One of those was HB 880 by Representative Bethany Ballard that Katie mentioned earlier. And so just for a little refresher, HB 880 is the military spouses licensing bill. And so that bill is going to help streamline the process for spouses of service members who are stationed here in Georgia to be able to more quickly receive their occupational licenses to work here in the state. That's including nurses, teachers, and some of our other really high-demand careers. We saw that bill pass out of the House, and it is being heard by the Senate Veterans, Military, and Homeland Security Committee later this evening, but we're really excited to have the opportunity to speak with the sponsor of this bill, Representative Bethany Ballard.
We are so excited to have Representative Bethany Ballard here with us, and welcome to the show. Before we talk about House Bill 880, I'd love for our listeners to get to know you a little bit. Would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself, your district, and kind of what led you to be a representative here?
I am a former teacher and a military spouse. My husband was in the Air Force active duty for several years, and then he's been in the reserves for a couple of decades now. And our district is Warner Robins and Centerville and newly part of Peach County, but we are a military district. And so that is why I sponsored House Bill 880, so that we could help our military spouses, because that is something that is just near and dear to my heart. And it will benefit our community and all of the other military communities throughout Georgia.
Awesome. The bill was originally introduced last year, I believe, and the chamber has been working with you on it since that time. So can you just explain a little bit about the legislation in particular and what it does, the impact that it will have, not just on our state's military families or your district, but kind of the state's overall economy as well?
Okay. The military economic impact in Georgia with our 9 military installations is about $20 billion. So that's a huge economic impact. And we have about 57,000 active duty troops in Georgia, and about half of them have spouses. So that's 25,000 spouses who want to come to Georgia and work. And the way it's been working before this legislation, which will hopefully pass, spouses are out of work for between 6 and 9 months. Now, it does not matter how much money you make in your family budget. If you are used to 2 incomes to be out of work and to only have half that income for 10 months, 9-10 months, that's a lot. That's a big impact on your family. It's also a big impact on Georgia. We want people to come here and work and contribute to Georgia because we are the best place to do business. And so we want to make sure that our military spouses can come here and be comfortable and be a real part of Georgia while they're stationed here.
And this bill is going to be heard this afternoon in the Senate Veterans, Military, and Homeland Security Committee.
Yes.
Is it just a hearing only? Do you expect it to move out this afternoon?
I am very hopeful that it moves out this afternoon.
Awesome. Yes. So hopefully we'll be coming back to y'all next week with an update on that bill. But just wanted to say thank you on behalf of the chamber and our hub chamber council. I know that your district is a hub district. I know you've been working closely with us on this issue, and we're really appreciative of your dedication to these families, especially since you've been one yourself.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate all the support that I've been given and that everybody's given our military spouses.
Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We also have an update on HB 982, and that is the High Demand Careers List bill. That is a Georgia Chamber scorecard bill, like we mentioned earlier, and it is by Representative Matthew Gamble. It passed out of the Senate Higher Education Committee earlier this week, and we're really excited to also have Representative Gamble on the show to tell us a little bit more about the bill.
We're excited to have another special guest join us here on the Session Series podcast. Will y'all join me in welcoming Representative Matt Gamble?
Thank you, Katie. It's good to be with you today.
We're excited to have you here. For those of our members who are not in your district, could you talk a little bit about you and what brought you to be an elected official?
Sure. I'm a native of Cartersville, Georgia, born and raised there, graduated from Cartersville City School System, went on to get a degree in political science from Lee University, and actually have been a member of the Georgia Chamber. I've been involved with the Georgia Chamber Governmental Affairs Council in the past. I worked in career and technical education for about 15 years, working for the Georgia Association for Career and Technical Education, which is how I got involved in all of that. And then in 2018, Representative Paul Battles, who had represented the House 15th District, which is there in my hometown, Cartersville, he retired after 10 years, and he came to me and said, "Matthew, I think you need to run." And I said, "Paul, I don't know that I can really do this." And I went home and prayed with my wife, Danae, and talked through, how do we make this work? Can I actually do it? And I jumped in the race and had a primary opponent in 2018 and won the primary. And then I was sworn in January of 2019. So this is my 6th legislative session. And I am now working for Parish Construction Group. I'm no longer in career and technical education, but I still have been very involved with the Chamber's work and appreciate all that they do on behalf of the businesses in our state.
Thank you for that. I can speak on behalf of the entire Chamber. We really enjoy working with you and your newer role as a legislator and appreciate all that you do.
Yep.
I know that your kind of past role in CTAE work kind of led to the bill we're going to talk about here today. But before we talk about that, can you explain what being a governor's floor leader means for our listeners?
Sure. So last year in the 2023 legislative session, the governor asked me to serve as a floor leader. And that's basically a position, since the governor's a member of the executive branch, he can't actually introduce legislation. So in order to pass his legislative priorities, he needs actual legislators to file and introduce and carry those bills. So I was honored that he would ask me to do that. I have a lot of respect for our governor. And honestly, when he came and asked, I asked the governor's policy folks, I said, how much time do I have to get you an answer? Because I really don't know. I know what this will entail. And they said, well, we need to know by 4 o'clock today. So I called and I said, all right, this is what's going on. And again, we, you know, prayed about it and felt like it was a good opportunity. But I felt like I couldn't say no to him because of how great of a job he had done managing our state, especially during COVID and everything that he had gone through during that time, and got up every morning and put his boots on and went to work and fought for us. And I think that we can clearly see that because of his efforts, because of his perseverance and diligence during that time, it positioned our state in a way that has just, you know, we've seen so much overflow of the benefit of the policy decisions that were made and the approach of how we handled COVID. It was an easy decision, and so I've been honored to serve. So I've worked on several pieces of legislation on his behalf. Last year I had three different measures that I worked on. This year I've had two, but the gas tax suspensions on diesel and motor fuels tax, I carried both of those, and we had to pass those to ratify what he had done under executive order. And that, of course, leads to one of the bills you want to talk about, which is this year's bill, House Bill 982. But that's basically what the floor leader team does. There's six of us, and there's four House members and two Senate members. We all are in the same office suite. It's unique because it's the only office suite in the Capitol where there's House members and Senate members together. And that's kind of fun, too, because we all work together as a team to help pass the governor's legislative priorities.
That's awesome. I appreciate you kind of explaining that. I didn't even really know all the details exactly, so I know it'll be really beneficial to our listeners. That's a good segue into the bill that we have you on here to talk about today, which is the High Demand Career List Bill, House Bill 982, which the Chamber has taken both a support and scorecard position on. So can you just tell us about that bill and what brought you and the governor to want to bring this to the floor?
Well, several years ago under Governor Deal, the High Demand Career Initiative was started, and I want to thank the work that was put in by the previous legislature to pass that and set that into motion, the leadership of Governor Deal and his administration to do that. It's a great program. And what this bill does is it just builds upon a great foundation. We found that in the development of the list of high-demand careers, that there were several entities that were involved in several lists, all very well thought out, but some of them did not quite match exactly. And so there was a little bit of confusion amongst the stakeholders as to what was high demand and what was not. So the basic intent of the bill is to empower the State Workforce Investment Board, which is, we're not creating a new board. They've been in place for a very long time. They're the fiscal agents for the federal WIOA Workforce Investment Act funding that the state gets. And it empowers them to also determine this list of high demand careers. There'll be the single sole entity for establishing that list, and we no longer will have the confusion that we have had as to what's high demand and what's not. And so that's the power of it's just streamlining it. It's making it more easily to understand. And, of course, the opportunity is still there for students who are interested in pursuing these careers to have their degree programs paid for at the technical college for free, because they're deemed to be high-demand careers. Now, if there's an industry that is not currently listed on the high-demand career list that is a high demand career, if there's a career that's currently listed that maybe is no longer high demand, that's what the State Workforce Investment Board will do, is to determine what should we keep, what should we add, what should, you know, maybe be regionally focused. If there's a career in one part of the state that's more high demand than another, then that board has the authority under this legislation to determine that career and make it high demand in that region so it meets the regional needs of our state, since we know our state is very diverse and has a lot of different needs.
That's incredibly helpful. We should have had you on the podcast a few weeks ago to explain that, because I don't think we've been doing it justice, but we appreciate that. Of course, the Chamber always prioritizes workforce development and making sure that we have a pipeline to bring us forward into the future. So
absolutely.
Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and I really appreciate the support of the Chamber to get this across the finish line. It has certainly helped, and so that wouldn't have been possible without y'all's leadership and, of course, the Governmental Affairs Council and their efforts to make this a scorecard issue and push this as one of y'all's priorities. I think it's great.
And who's carrying it in the Senate?
Senator Bo Hatchett.
Okay. Well, we will continue to follow it through the process and keep everyone posted.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope everyone enjoyed getting to hear from Representatives Ballard and Gamble today. It's always great to get the perspective of the legislators and learn a little bit more about why those bills are important for them and kind of a little bit more about what goes on behind the scenes.
Yes, I actually, a couple of the things that both of them mentioned today, I did not realize how Bethany Ballard was a military spouse herself, mm-hmm. and how Representative Gamble had worked in the CTAE field before being a legislator himself. So it's cool to see them taking their former lives or their passions and being able to produce legislation with those.
Definitely. Also just some of that institutional knowledge that a lot of people just aren't aware of.
Exactly. But you also got to sit down with a special guest contributor today to talk about the passage of the fiscal year 2025 budget. This was a pretty big deal for the podcast to have our House Appropriations Chairman join us. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
That's right. I did. I had the opportunity to sit down with House Appropriations Chairman Matt Hatchett, and he told us a little bit about the budget process, which is very interesting if you at all are interested in the legislative process, and just some of the items that we saw on the House version of the 2025 budget. I am sitting here with Representative Matt Hatchett, and we just saw the passing of the FY 2025 budget. So, Chairman, congratulations on the passage of that. Can you give us just a few details about what that bill entails?
Thank you. It's $36.1 billion. It's an increase over last year's original FY 24 budget of 11%. So, it's got a lot of things in it.
Mm-hmm. Any particular highlights that you're looking forward to sharing?
So it does include a 4% raise for all state employees. It includes a $2,500 a year raise for all teachers. There's a $1,000 supplement in it for custodians. There's one part I'm excited about. A lot of it I like, but over $24 million is in this budget to help our domestic violence shelters and sexual assault centers. They've been affected a lot because of cutting of federal funds, and they knew it was coming, and everybody did. So we've been able to help some. We require certain things of them, so we believe that we need to fund them to do the things that we ask of them.
And I know that there's been a lot of talk about the transportation investment that the governor announced. Is there anything on the transportation front in this year's budget?
There is still over two and a half billion dollars in this budget for transportation issues. The huge add last year, or in the amended that we just finished a couple of weeks ago, did add $1.5 billion in the transportation, just the transportation budget alone, and it made the total investment in transportation by the state for fiscal year 24 is going to be, I think, $3.9 billion.
Wow.
So, which is a lot.
So we've seen the budget pass out of the House. What happens next?
So now it's the Senate subcommittees, appropriations, Senate subcommittees have already been meeting on it, because once we came out of committee Monday or Tuesday morning, it was available online, so they knew what the budget is. So they've been meeting Wednesday and Thursday. Yesterday was committee day. They've already been meeting based on what we were voting on today. So there, it'll, you know, probably a couple of weeks, it'll come out of the Senate. And, you know, it'll be different. And then that's when three members from the House and three members from the Senate, we go into what's called a conference committee and come up with hopefully an agreement on a final budget. We also confer with the governor's office on that they may have some issues that they point out to us that they may not like, and you know, and hopefully we can come to some sort of agreement. So.
Well, I believe that the only constitutional requirement of the General Assembly is to pass a balanced budget. So half of the work is done.
That is it.
And we will make sure to keep you updated as we see updates on the budget.
Great.
It's no secret to anyone that this year is an election year. This week was qualifying week, so anyone who is running for elected office at the state or federal level made their way under the Gold Dome this week to fill out their paperwork. And a lot of candidates use this opportunity to actually announce that they're running. You'll see a lot of candidates out in the halls recording videos and posting on social media. So it was fun to see everyone at the Capitol this week.
Yes, Monday morning especially, everyone was lined up. I think it took a couple hours for people to get through the lines. I was texting with a couple representatives who were waiting in line, and they had been there for at least 2 hours by the time they actually made it into the room to officially qualify. But all of Georgia's 14 U.S. representatives, 56 state senators, and 180 state representatives are up for election this year, as are district attorneys, state judges, and other officials. So they have until noon on Friday to fill out their paperwork and pay their fees. And this is the unofficial start to the campaign season. You know, this is going to be when we start seeing the signs popping up and the requests for donations and fundraising events coming out. And the Chamber PAC will begin our process of vetting these candidates, making endorsements for pro-business candidates in various open seats throughout the state. Of course, legislators can't begin fundraising until the final gavel on signee day, so it'll be a few weeks before the real fun begins.
So, Katie, what's the best way for our members to stay updated on upcoming endorsements from the Chamber this election cycle?
We post all of our endorsements on social media, so make sure that you're following us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, all of the major platforms, and you'll be able to keep up with our Chamber endorsements and updates throughout the rest of the cycle. I also think we may be doing some podcast interviews, hopefully with some of these endorsed candidates, so y'all stay tuned for that. But also be on the lookout for our latest endorsement in the race to fill the vacant seat in House District 139. Of course, this was previously held by the late House Rules Chairman Richard Smith. The Chamber is excited to announce our endorsement of Sean Knox in that race. Knox is president of Knox Pest Control and is an active community member. He serves on several boards, including the Georgia Chamber of Commerce Board, as well as the Columbus Chamber of Commerce Board. He's a graduate of the Georgia Pest Control Association Leadership Program, Leadership Columbus, and Leadership Georgia, and he received degrees from Georgia Southern University and Baylor University. The special election is scheduled for April the 9th, so if you live in House District 139, make sure you get out and vote.
That's right. Make sure you're following the Georgia Chamber on all of our major platforms. I will link all of those in the show notes so you can make sure that you stay updated. November is 8 months away, but it is going to be here before you know it. So, Katie, thank you for your updates today, and make sure you're following us to stay updated with election news. And we'll see y'all next week.
See you then.